The Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Matich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, we're talking SEC football here. We started the show by playing a clip of an angry Alabama fan. He called into the Paul Feinbaum show. Among other things, he said about Kalen DeBoer, and I'm only slightly paraphrasing here, that if DeBoer were on life support, the fan would pull the plug to charge his phone. Things are not going well in Tuscaloosa. Past five games, DeBoer and the Crimson Tide are 5-5. And there are multiple losses to unranked opponents, including to Florida State over the weekend. What should the concern level be at Alabama for the way things have been going recently for that program?
I think it's a huge concern level, Adam. And it's not just that they've lost those games. It's that they lost those games with an apparent lack of discipline. Alabama is used to playing the cleanest of either side that's on the field. But under Kalen DeBoer, I believe that every single game that he's coached for Alabama last year and this, Alabama had more penalties than the opponent. This time, Alabama had 8 penalties. Florida State had 4, so it held up in this game. Alabama on defense would take poor angles to tackles. They'd be out of position. They'd be out of rush lanes. They would, on offense, drop passes and just miss blocks and just do all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't expect. And, of course, the conversation is that DeBoer has a different style of discipline. Nick Saban, everything comes from the top down. And he also had leaders in the locker room. So not a whole lot of problems actually reached his desk because the alphas in the locker room took care of it. All of a sudden, Saban's gone. DeBoer comes in with a process that expects guys to discipline themselves, to act like grown men. And I think a lot of those guys just don't know how to do it. And Alabama has lost games in part because of it. I mean, you look at this Florida State game. A big reason they lost was Florida State quarterback Tommy Castellanos running the ball. He was their leading rusher, and he ripped off some really big runs at critical moments for Florida State. And some of those were from the pocket, and the pass rushers got out of their lanes because they were so excited to rush the passer that they forgot to maintain lane discipline. A big gap opened up in the front of the pocket, and Castellanos would just take off running through it. Well, that's a discipline issue. And so I think right now the seat for DeBoer, even though I think he's one of the best coaches in the country overall, it is not translating at Alabama, and they are losing for reasons that are very un-Alabama-like.
We were just talking about Tennessee's win against Syracuse. What were your initial impressions of Joey Aguilar under center for the Volunteers? And was there anything you saw from him that you did not see from Nico Iamaliava in the same position last season?
Yeah, it was a feel that was different, first of all, because with Iamaliava last year, it didn't seem like he made you think, as a person watching the game, that at any time he could explode for a big play. It just seemed like they were kind of playing around his limitations. And in the first games of the season, non-conference games, boy, was he great. But when they got into SEC play, they didn't let him do very much. And I think part of it is because they were afraid he'd mess up. And you saw that in the Oklahoma game last year, where they only threw it like 19 times, but he fumbled the ball multiple times in the pocket during those 19 attempts. And so I think what you saw with Aguilar, being a guy with a lot more college football experience than Nico last year, is a guy that you felt like was in command. He was in control. He was running that offense at hyper tempo when they were called upon to do it. They don't do that every play, every series, but when it called upon, he was in control of it. And I tell you what, that long pass to Braylon Staley was a thing of beauty. That touchdown pass, 73 yards. The thing I liked about it was that Aguilar threw the ball way up high in the air and allowed it out in front and allowed Staley to kick it up to one more gear and run under it to adjust to it rather than throw it on a rope that has to be absolutely perfectly accurate in order for the receiver to have a chance to pull it down. And so he'll complete, I believe, Aguilar a lot more of those deep passes than Nico did if he continues to throw the ball the way he threw it with that kind of trajectory down the field. And remember that this offense needs two things from the quarterback in order to succeed. Well, the first two things are, number one, be able to operate efficiently at high tempo, and number two, connect on those downfield passes. And Aguilar, in his first game, seemed like he was able to check both of those boxes.
Now, Trevor, this weekend, I think probably what the biggest game was the Ohio State-Texas game. Obviously, the hype coming in for Arch Manning. Were you surprised at how he played, or is this what you thought it was going to be? Because when you're listening to even the announcers as they're calling a game, it's almost as if they're blaming everything else on everybody else instead of just saying, hey, the kid – is playing like someone that's just playing his first big game against a top five opponent. He's playing bad. He will possibly play better as he moves forward, but he's just playing a bad game. Honestly, it looked like a kid that deer in the headlights look. It seemed like he was a little nervous and he was a tad bit late or too fast on a lot of his throws.
Yeah, D-Maze, I think that really encapsulates what you just said. His experience in this game against the Buckeyes, and you could see it in the very first game. I mean, I picked Texas to win this game. I thought that they had enough to win, and certainly they outgained Texas by about 130 yards. They were better in a whole lot of statistical categories than Ohio State was. Texas was better than Ohio State. But there were a couple of problems. One is that in situations, Ohio State was better. In other words, on fourth down, Texas had four opportunities. They only converted one of them. They were 1 of 5 on fourth down, including down at the goal line on a goal line stance that the Buckeyes defense came up big. This is in a game when they lost by 7 points. But then you go to what you said about Arch now, the quarterback for Texas. The very first play of the game was a scripted rollout to the right. He had a receiver mirroring his roll to the right with a crossing route going from left to right, about 15 yards or so downfield. And pressure was on the way, but it wasn't anywhere near close enough to him to affect the throw to a wide open receiver right in front of him. And Arch threw the ball in the dirt about 2 yards in front of his receiver. Now, this wasn't a timing throw to a spot, and maybe the receiver was in the wrong place. This wasn't that kind of a play. And so it was just, you know, Arch was intensely inaccurate on that play. And that's very un-Arch-like. He's better than that, but mentally, he let it get the best of him. There was another play. I did a Telestrator breakdown on SportsCenter about this. There was another play where Arch threw a bubble screen out to the right, and the ball was caught, but the ball was so low that the receiver went to the ground to catch the ball. So Arch actually had two stats on that play. He had a completion, and he had a tackle, because he tackled his own receiver by throwing the ball so low, the receiver was on the ground making the catch. You know, I say that facetiously. He's not listed on the thing. But, I mean, Arch can throw a bubble screen, but not on that play. And then the biggest play of the game, I think, that you would say from a negative standpoint for Arch, was an interception that led to Ohio State's game-winning touchdown drive. Arch had a receiver on the right running a deep out route. And that receiver, Ryan Wingo, had his defender turned completely around when he kind of faked and stemmed to the inside. Then Wingo cut outside. He had a lot of separation. And if Arch had thrown the ball out in front of him toward the sideline, then it would have been an easy pitch and catch for a nice game. But Arch, with no pressure, threw the ball inside where the DB that had gotten beat was. And the DB just stepped up and caught the ball, and the Buckeyes offense then took it down for what became the game-winning touchdown. That was another opportunity that was there to be taken by Arch, and he just missed it. Now, Ohio State's defense was phenomenal all game long. It is the opportunities that were there that were missed that I'm talking about, and those are the ones that Arch wishes he would have back. But to his credit, after everything went so badly – for 3.5 quarters, in the final few minutes, Arch finally woke up and started making some amazing throws. So I'm not worried about him going forward. I am wondering why in the world he was mentally in such a funk for the first 3.5 quarters of this game, and then was able to come out and play like the Arch Manning we expected late in the game, but it was too little too late.
Trevor Maddux is with us from ESPN. We're breaking down a great opening weekend in college football. So, Trevor, every Vanderbilt follower was watching with a keen eye on the Virginia Tech-South Carolina game. It's a little round robin between those three teams. Vanderbilt's next two games are on the road against those opponents. Let's start with Virginia Tech. It looks like it's not a big favorite, even though that's a great home field advantage traditionally over in Blacksburg. But what are your thoughts on Vanderbilt's matchup with Virginia Tech?
Well, I think this is a very winnable game for Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt is really improved this year. I mean, they weren't really tested in their opener. But I think with another year with Pavia, not just with his progressing as a quarterback, but with his attitude being infused into the team and the belief that they have in him taking them to the next level in terms of their belief. And, you know, you guys know that believing you can get it done is a big part of it. Virginia Tech faced a great quarterback, and I mean great, for South Carolina in Lenora Sellers. But the rest of that Virginia Tech team, I think, has some vulnerabilities, especially at the line of scrimmage. I don't think South Carolina's offensive line is all that good. I don't think that South Carolina's defensive front is all that great, with the exception of one guy who's an amazing pass rusher. I think that Virginia Tech had a chance here. The problem is Virginia Tech kept on, you know, having, I don't want to say the word I want to say, where you make your foot get obliterated. I don't want to use that word. They made self-inflicted mistakes. Okay. And, you know, they had a couple of turnovers. You know, they Virginia Tech didn't play like I thought they could. Now, the question is Virginia Tech really at that place? Did we see Virginia Tech at their best? Because, you know, they lost this game 24-11 to South Carolina. And truthfully, I thought Virginia Tech had a chance to not just be a lot closer, but possibly even beat South Carolina. What you have to worry about with Virginia Tech is their quarterback, Kyren Drones, is one of those guys that when he gets hot, he is amazing, and he just wasn't hot in this game. So, you know, I think this will be a tough game for Vanderbilt, but this is very much a winnable game.
Quick one here for you as we get out, Trevor. There's been a great trend. Like Jaden Daniels, I honestly hadn't watched him play a whole lot until he got to LSU and then lit it up, right? There's a lot of guys like that. Of course, Cam Ward was like that. So here's Carson Beck, who, of course, has been in the spotlight, but he had the injury. Now he's got that extra year. He's got a real chance to up his stock. What did you think about his performance against Notre Dame?
Yeah, well, I thought he was fantastic against Notre Dame. Just the numbers are great. I mean, his QBR was 85 out of a possible 100. 100's perfect. 50 is average. He was 85, even though Miami lost their top six receivers from last year, and Notre Dame has one of the best secondaries in all of college football. So Beck showed that he belongs in the conversation among the top quarterbacks in the nation, among front runners in the Heisman, because he used this experience. I mean, it wasn't that he out-athleted Notre Dame. He knew where to put the ball, and then he put it there accurately. He knew what situations required which solutions, and he went right to those solutions. And it's that experience, really, that caused them to win the game, because Notre Dame had a freshman quarterback that didn't know that stuff. And so I think that Miami is a team that, especially with the way Clemson performed against LSU, I don't want to overreact, but those two teams may be a whole lot closer than people thought, than I thought, in the preseason. And this Miami team may well be good enough to make the playoff and do some damage, especially because their defense is so vastly upgraded. But Carson Beck, even though he takes the place of the number one pick in the draft, Cam Ward, Carson Beck operated this offense more like a pro quarterback than Cam Ward did.
Trevor Maddux has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingit, and Donick. He is brought to you every week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, guys.
Trevor Maddux on the program. 615-737-1025. We will get back into our pressing Titans questions. Willie was kind enough to let me take a stab at the question today, so we will do that coming up next. But I did promise a giveaway. So be caller. Pick a number, Derek.
5.
Be caller number 5 at 615-737-1025. And you can win a pair of tickets to see Nelly at the Ascend Amphitheater on Tuesday, September 16th, two weeks from tonight. Caller number 5, you will win a pair of tickets to see Nelly at the Ascend Amphitheater on Tuesday, September 16th. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Ving, and 102.5 The Game.